October 24th was a Tuesday, so that means Jed Williams had the weekly UVA Writers Roundtable on WINA's Best Seat in the House. Jay Jenkins of the Daily Progress and Chris Wright of thesabre.com came in to talk football with Jed. Jed and the writers took listener calls and answered questions about the Virginia football team.
The Cheddaroo, Mancini, and more. We've assembled an army to serve your sports needs. This is the two-hour Best Seat in the House on News Radio 1070 WINA.
All right, rein in the phone calls. We're going right to 7 o'clock with the UVA Writers Roundtable. The Jetteroo, Jed Williams, Mancini, A.V. Adrian Vigil with Tucker earlier in the show, Jesse Spears handling the Best Seat Blitz and your phone calls tonight, Chris Wright of thesabre.com, Jay Jenkins, good fops, Jay Jenkins of the Charlottesville Daily Progress, good friends comprising our weekly Tuesday UVA Writers Roundtable. And remember, if you're the best phone caller tonight on UVA football, you'll win a Sabre prize package that includes an embroidered pair of Virginia shorts and a one-month subscription to the Sabre Edge, all the exclusive content from thesabre.com. 7 o'clock hour, we're doing basketball talk, best basketball stories, why you like the team. You'll call in for that and get yourself registered for all kinds of basketball tickets and a pair of Virginia NC State football tickets. Bribery works, kids. Bribery works. 977-1070, 1-800-688-9462. Bob on one. Hey, Bob.
I just had a comment about Thursday night's game against UNC.
Yes, sir.
And that a win's a win, and especially in this case, there's something, I mean, this is a team that's challenged, has been challenged up till Thursday night in all phases of the game. And I think this was just an opportunity for them to feel some success and get rid of that doubt that has been, that has got crept into their psyche up to now. I think it was great for them. I think this could just be an opportunity to really rocket some games from here on out, around the season out.
That's the beauty of having Duke on your schedule where it was and Carolina on your schedule where it was. And I guess that's the beauty, Bill, if it's Bob, if it's going to be a flawed, if you're going to be a flawed team, better to be a flawed team in a flawed ACC where you don't get run over every week.
That's right. I'm looking forward to some more games like that. It was early on in the season, around the third game of the season, I was ready to write it off.
Yeah.
Such a fan I am, right?
But, yeah, the rats were falling off the ship in a hurry.
Right, and I'm excited now. I think this is good for the coaching staff, the players, and the fans.
All right, Bob, good stuff. Thanks for calling in. All right, let me bounce some ideas off you guys. I think Bob makes a good point. It's a point we made in the first segment, and that was it was a good victory. It was their most complete victory. It was their second shutout victory of the year, 23-0. But, Jay, it was a flawed victory. There were some inconsistencies. There were some low points, things Al Groh talked about today. For you, as you get ready for a team like NC State where you can't make some of the same mistakes, what are the warts or the inconsistencies from the Carolina game that stick out that Virginia fans should be worried about?
The tackling. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious that there were times where Ronnie McGill was able to carry some defenders with him downfield. And Ronnie McGill is a great back. He's a senior at Carolina. He's put up great numbers. But he is nothing similar to Andre Brown or Tony Baker of NC State. Those guys are very talented. If Virginia doesn't wrap up, and play two-hand tag football, they're going to be in trouble.
Tackling was a problem against North Carolina. I don't know if speed is going to be as magnified against a team like UNC, Chris, because Carolina doesn't have great speed, especially at the skill position players, and none more for power. But this weekend, speed could be an issue again. Baker and Brown are fast. Their wide receivers are fast. They play a fast sort of open field game under Mark Trestman. Do you continue to worry about defensive speed, especially in the linebacking core?
Oh, of course. Every game they've struggled in, the other team has had a lot of speed, particularly on offense. And Coach Groh said this may, as a group, be the fastest group of receivers they've seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think the issues with giving up big plays that we were talking about before we went to break there could be magnified this week if, you know, they miss some tackles, like Jay's saying. If the guys don't get their head around to see the ball, the defensive backs, like Bill saying, you could see some big plays from this group because they have some playmakers on the NC State squad.
On the offensive side of the ball, how would you evaluate the offensive line play? Sewell had time to throw at times, and at other times plays broke down and he had to improvise. How would you size up the offensive line, step forward or holding pattern?
I think it's a huge step forward.
Okay.
Not just that they got the win, but there were several instances where, you know, Sewell had plenty of time, and that hasn't been always the case this season. In just talking to the offensive line, they've watched the video, they've heard the coaches, and they were really pleased with their performance in that game, so I have to lean to that side.
It also seemed that the offensive line made some adjustments, Chris, at halftime. I thought some of the protection problems they had in the first half were not as glaring in the second half. They made some adjustments and it worked.
Yeah, no, they had Carolina blitzed more than they had shown tendencies for this year. Gave Virginia a little bit of trouble early. They adjusted to it. in their blocking schemes and their protection schemes. And their run blocking has gotten a lot better over the course of the last month. So you can't just look at it from a protection standpoint. You put up a career night for Jason Snelling. The week before, Jameel Sewell has a lot of yards. Now, granted, some of that was on scrambling,
sure.
But
yeah.
They're rushing.
But some design
run blocking
stuff also.
Looks
yeah.
better. It looks a lot better.
Joey Mancini has a formula. If this team runs for over 180 yards and doesn't commit too many stupid penalties or turnovers, this team can win football games the rest of the year. Right, Mancini?
Oh, yeah. I've said that. I said that before the Maryland game. Unfortunately, there were a lot of stupid kind of individual plays and just real debilitating problems and that occurred for them to lose that game. But they did rush for 180 yards and were ahead.
And even more than that against Carolina. Okay, look who's on line two. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the piece you have to add to that is without giving up big plays.
Right.
That's the other
key. That has to be the caveat.
I just wanted to throw that in there. Yes, they could rush for 180 yards, but if they give up four one-score plays like they did against Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's what we're talking about with the, you know, with the individual big plays.
Yeah. Yeah. The mayor is on line two, Tommy Trojan, back in the best seat in the house. How are you, Tommy?
Doing fine. How are you doing, Jed?
Good to talk to you, sir. What's going on?
Not much. I was listening to the show, and the guys were asking about you dressing up for Halloween next Tuesday night. But I've been with you for 6 years, and you've dressed up in a clown outfit for most of those games. So I wonder what's going to be different this time.
Every
around.
Night for 6 years, I knew you couldn't you had to get that jab, and then you couldn't resist, right?
Not at all. Maybe I wore dark clothing. You wore the bright colors that I usually wear.
I'll dress up as Myron Ripley. So, I'll wear my Sunday best. It'll be like Easter Sunday, and I'll be playing the role of Myron Ripley.
That sounds good. So, my question is, and I apologize, I did not hear the first part of y'all's segment, but I'm going to sort of turn tables to the basketball side just for a second. I'm just curious that, with Jay and Chris and Jed, how did the Virginia team, and I know obviously I'm partisan, but they finished tied for seventh last year. They returned all the starters. I think there was only three teams in the conference, and they finished, and they end up getting a prediction of eighth. That just was mind-boggling to me in the basketball side. I'm not saying that they won't finish eighth or lower, but it seemed to me they were deserving a little bit higher, and I'd just be curious to what all y'all had to think about that.
I'll go to you guys for your reaction to the poll. Thanks, Mayor. I didn't vote in that poll. I think the poll is typically inaccurate every year. That's why it's a preseason poll, but I thought this one was off base in a lot of ways, not just Virginia, Chris.
Well, there are two ways you can look at this. One, it's held in Greensboro, North Carolina. And the Carolina beat writers have no respect for Virginia basketball. So that when they are weighing the vote, that always affects it. The other way you can look at it is like you just said, like it's typically inaccurate. Look at the football preseason bowl.
About so.
So, I mean, whatever.
Who thought Wake Forest would be bowl eligible right now?
The media basically looks at returning starters, looks at, trends and votes based on that. There are not very many media people, and there are exceptions that look at it the way you're supposed to and vote.
I guess what baffled me, and then we'll leave it at this, and we'll get back to basketball in the 7 o'clock hour, is I thought in the modern age of college basketball, Snoop, guard play was valued above anything else. Virginia has the best set of guards in the ACC with Sean Singletary and J.R. Reynolds, yet was voted behind a Boston College team that needs to break in a new point guard, a Virginia Tech team whose guards are not as good and who have not played in the postseason, and a Maryland team that fell apart the last 2 years because they didn't have point guard play. To me, if you have Singletary and Reynolds, that's a good enough starting point to be in the top half of the league.
I expected them to be fifth, and it really, like Chris said, the North Carolina bias is obviously there because it's hard for papers to get their writers down to Greensboro. If you're a Florida State writer, it's very unlikely that you're going to, pay the dime to get there.
Right.
But I didn't vote, thank goodness, or it might even be flawed more, but I couldn't tell you the starting five at Georgia Tech. I mean, it's just too early in the season to be voting. These polls mean nothing. Luke Schencher, is he still on the team there?
Shoot, I talked to Paul Hewitt 2 days ago. He couldn't tell me the starting five at Georgia Tech. He's their gosh darn coach. So, okay, so we'll get to some basketball. We'll tell the Solomon Tatt story at 7 o'clock. More with the writers coming up on Virginia football. Chris Wright, Jay Jenkins here. Prizes on the line. Phone lines open, 977-1070, 977-1070, 1-800-688-9462. We went over some things that need improvement. The checklist, the positive checklist from Thursday is on the way. Some miscellaneous thoughts on the John Bunting situation, and we'll look ahead to NC State. Al Gross says they're the most dangerous team the Cavaliers have played to date. We'll see Saturday at noon. We'll talk about it next on the Tuesday Best Seat.